Now the question may arise, what about all those millions, tens of millions, thousands of millions of believers, devout Christians, devout Buddhists, pious Hindus, strict Confucianists and so on, in all the various religions, in all the various churches, all through the centuries? Can't one say that they were religious? Well, strictly speaking, one can't, because they weren't really self-conscious. They weren't really self-aware. They weren't really deliberately and consciously using religion, the teachings and practices and observances of religion, the particular religion to which they belong, as a means of achieving wholeness. Theirs, one might say, was a mere passive, semi-conscious participation. And sometimes one might even say they were just using religion in a fundamentally irreligious way, the masses of nominal followers. We're quite familiar with this in all religions. It's the same here in a Christian country, a normally Christian country like England. Even those who do go to church, who are using Christianity, who are participating in it, aren't participating in a self-aware way for the sake of their higher evolution. They're just conforming. They're getting some sort of emotional satisfaction, blindly, sort of half-consciously, which is quite a different thing. You go to a Buddhist country like Ceylon or Burma or Thailand or Japan, in almost all cases it's exactly the same. The vast majority are not conscious participants at all, just passive beneficiaries on a very low level indeed. So religion, even when nominally professed by everybody, is still, most of the time, if not all the time, very definitely for the minority. And it's because the masses tend to use religion in a fundamentally irreligious way, to make use of it in a sort of semi-magical way, just to help get what they want. This is one of the reasons, we may say, for the failure of the church. It's becoming conventionalized in accordance with the non-religious or pseudo-religious needs of the masses. I remember a little while ago I was reading a book. This book was discussing, I forget exactly the terms of the discussion, but it was, I think, as far as I remember, the non-belief of modern people in England in Christianity. And someone was writing a letter and saying, it's not the non-belief of the non-Christians that shocks me, it's the belief of the Christians. And the writer, who was a woman, gave two little stories to illustrate this. One story was that she met a certain woman who for about 30 to 40 years had been a pious Christian, gone to church every Sunday, put sixpence in the collection plate, gone to a prayer meeting on Wednesdays, Mother's Union on Friday, all the rest of the routine and rigmarole. So this person, the letter writer, met this woman after an interval during which the woman had been ill. So when she met her, she said, "Oh, how do you feel? I hear you've been ill." So she said, in reply to the question, "I've lost all my faith. I feel so bitter to think I've been a good woman all these years. I've believed in God. I've gone to church. What do you think?" I said, "He's just let me down. I felt fallen sick. For 3 whole weeks I was suffering. So I've lost my faith in God. I've become really bitter about this." So the writer commented, "It's this sort of belief which really shocks me." And there was a similar case. Another case, she met a woman coming from the funeral of her best friend, a young woman who died in childbirth. And she said, "You know, I've been a good Christian all these years, you know, but I'm losing my faith." "Why?" She said, "Look, this woman, she died in childbirth, a respectable married woman, under that so-and-so girl, you know, in the next street. She had an illegitimate baby and she didn't die. What sort of God is this? He allows these sort of things to come on. I'm losing my faith," she also said. So this woman again commented, "It's not the belief of, or it's not the non-belief of the non-Christians that shocks me, it's the belief of the Christians that shocks me." Because we're trying, conventionally religious people are trying, the massive religious or nominally religious people are trying all the time to use, to bend, to twist, to pervert religious teachings just to satisfy their own needs and their own desires. And because they've got control, as it were, that they're sitting there on the bench of bishops and in the prebendary stalls and all the rest of it, is because they've got control, really. Fundamentally, irreligious people have got control of the machinery of religion at all levels, that the churches fail. But even, to be quite honest, in the East, Buddhist organizations also fail, so far as sincerely religious, sincerely spiritual people are concerned. The churches and the sects, they very often become just, as it were, clubs for the non-religious and even the irreligious. The main thing is to belong to the club. Now, our main question has now been answered. Religion, we've seen, is the achievement, or consists in the achievement, of wholeness. It represents, in more simplified definition, a total concern with what is of ultimate value, and it's the means to the achievement of all this. And it's necessary, in the sense of indispensable to the existence of all those who are self-aware. All those who are self-aware and to whom the achievement of wholeness, psychological and spiritual wholeness, and in that wholeness relating to others and relating to ultimate reality are matters, not just of passing intellectual interest, but really of life and death concern. Religion is necessary for such people, right? Not for others.